Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports. And I'm watching a lot of Jeopardy this week.
I don't have a job right now. So when you say what your job is, yeah. It makes me go, oh, this sucks, actually.
It doesn't work because you don't have the job. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic. Right? I love my job. It's great.
I love my job. You know who doesn't love their job? Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan Markle, who quit the royal family this week. That's pretty good, right? I mean, they didn't quit. They stepped back from their roles as members of the royal family.
I cannot imagine caring about this. The idea that it's like, oh, the insanely rich people, they're going to try to make it on their own. Wow. I'm hoping for the best for these fucking psychos.
Yeah, I'm sort of fascinated by it in the sense that I feel like because she's American, there's going to be a certain yokoing of Meghan Markle that she put the idea in Harry's head to leave the family or whatever.
Well, Greg, they've already done that. Have you seen any of the coverage about the coverage of, like, apparently, you know, I don't know, but apparently the coverage by the British press of her whole existence has been insanely racist. I don't know that, you know, what specifically goes on with that, but I'll take people's word for it. I don't think it's the fact that she's American or not, you know, from royal. I think it is the fact that she's black that people are very upset about it. Although I did see that the apparently the Prince Andrew interview about Jeffrey Epstein might have played a role in this as well.
as it should.
My only thought on this is this just makes it even harder on guys where, like, your wife or girlfriend is like, you should quit your fantasy football league. And you're like, oh, babe, I can't do that. Like, this is coming at, like, Harry quit the royal family is going to get dropped. And there's no comeback for us. We're going to be like, sorry. Maybe you could quit playing video games 8 hours a day. I don't know. That seems like a big sacrifice. Yeah, we're done.
Well, Harry quit the royal family. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I could probably put down the controller now and again. Yeah. I bring this up also because apparently now, since they're free agents, I guess, it's become like when cities try to land the Amazon headquarters. There's open courtship of Meghan and Harry to come live in places, including, and this is where it becomes hockey adjacent, Tim Hortons has put out a tweet that says, no pressure, Meghan and Harry, but if you do choose to move to Canada, free coffee for life.
Yeah, they fucking need it.
Well, that's an offer they can't refuse.
Royal family's worth like £1 trillion or something like that. Yeah.
Plus, I figure they're probably tea drinkers.
We do have tea at Tim Hortons.
Never been to a Tim Hortons.
That was a big thing 2 years ago.
Hold the fuck on. You've never been to a Tim Hortons?
Greg, I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. We have Dunkin' Donuts, baby.
But you've been to New York. They have Tim Hortons in New York.
You know what else they have?
Aren't you
Dunkin' Donuts?
What?
They also have authentic bagels. A schmear on that, please.
But you're a curious person who works in hockey, although you generally loathe all things hockey culture. I always thought you would just be curious about – I know as a hockey fan – after watching Tim Hortons commercials and Tim Hortons references all my life, I wanted to go to Tim Hortons just to see what the fuck it was about.
The other issue for me is that I do not drink coffee. I don't enjoy coffee. So I'm only going for donuts, which, like, even at Dunkin' Donuts are not a selling point to me. So, you know, let me put it this way. The closest one I think is in Providence. It's certainly Providence is certainly the one I tried to go to one time while I was in Providence, and it was closed, and thus ended my journey to attempt to go to Tim Hortons.
You tried.
I tried. I put in the effort in that I pulled on.
You put in the effort.
I saw that the lights were out. I pulled on the door just to make sure it was firmly locked, and I said, well, I don't know what else you guys want from me.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what else. You need to Ryan O'Reilly that bitch. Drive a truck into it. Go now get fucking donuts.
Yep.
I like. I mean, I don't know how Sean feels about it. I like Tim Hortons. I like Tim Hortons. Breakfast sandwiches are pretty good. And at the Toronto Airport, when I fly out of Pearson, I frequently, if I'm like down and need a little energy boost, there's nothing that gets me vibrating quicker than a fucking ice cap and a Canadian maple donut. The sugar rush in that thing, I feel like I could lift a truck. I've got so much fucking sugar coursing through my body.
And you may need to. So yeah, it's yeah, Tim Hortons is good. But if you like something else, that's also fine. That's my hot take on Tim Hortons.
I'm sure.
What's
I'm
that
sure
coffee
it's
place
fine.
That's in Toronto?
Starbucks.
It's like the coffee. No, not Starbucks. The bean, the beanery, the bean coffee.
Starbucks beans. It's called.
No, it's not Starbucks. It's a competitor. But no, Tim Hortons is fine. And also, the other thing about Tim Hortons too is that it's open in many cases 24 hours, which really comes in handy. When I don't want to, you know, get that pizza at 2 in the morning, which is bad. I'm fine with Tim Hortons. You should go to one. You should experience it.
Well, no, I'm not
understand
driving
what our Canadian friends
to
like.
Have mediocre donuts and a hot tea. I can do that right here in the home of Dunkin' Donuts, Quincy, Massachusetts. So,
one of my favorite things about Dunkin' Donuts in Massachusetts was the attempted proliferation of Krispy Kreme in Boston, and then they got beaten back by the locals.
Yeah, no, who were like, that happens every once in a while here. When I was a kid, there was a chain called Honeydew Donuts that really tried to horn in, and everybody was like, "Get the fuck out of here! What's wrong with you?"
Mm-hmm. I remember that happening in my hometown of Mattawan when I was growing up, where we had a local bagel store called Eli's Bagels, very, very popular, and a Einstein Bagel tried to open up in the same shopping center as Eli's, and there was actually like a revolt from people that refused, like openly took pride in refusing to go to the chain restaurant and going to the local restaurant, and Einstein closed within like a year because people had loyalty to the local bagel shop.
Yeah,
inspiring.
That's cool.
Support your local businesses, people. Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to talk about in the show this week were, these fucking all-star jerseys. I know that some of us don't really give a shit about the all-star game or the all-star jerseys per se. But I wanted to, you've seen these things, right, boys?
Yes.
By now?
I think there are two or three good ones and the rest is like, I saw where they were going with the idea, but it didn't really work. I think the Vegas one is sick. I think the Vegas one is really good.
I think the Vegas one's okay, and like they also – I think also for those who haven't seen them, they took bars from like sheet music and put them on the front of the jersey because of the Blues.
It's in St. Louis.
Like we're going to represent the Blues. And then, so that's the gimmick. And I think there's only two logos for me that really work in that format, which are the Capitals logo and the Blues logo. The rest of them kind of look kind of fucking weird. They kind of look like they're out of sorts.
Well, I think
if only St. Louis had a distinctly shaped, iconic physical structure that you could build a jersey
what
around.
What they should have done
like
was made a crazy cat or whatever that thing was called, cool cat jersey for every NHL team. Every team gets their own.
Are you talking about the rejected
yes,
Mike Keenan third jersey?
Now that would be a great jersey for everybody to have at the All-Star game.
The dark jerseys look all right, as Jeffler pointed out. They kind of remind you of 1990s snapback hats a little bit, that design, like words on bars. But the fucking white jerseys look like a template. They don't look like they're done.
Yeah.
They look terrible.
I think the problem is that, especially with the white jerseys, is so the other thing is the logos are all one color, and it's like the primary color of the other team that is the like isn't black, basically. So, for example, the Bruins have an all-gold spoked B that would normally be black and gold, and the Flyers logo is all orange, and it just doesn't look good in that format because the rest of the jersey is white with like very light gray bars, and there's not enough offsetting it. Like, if you want to do like just the big bright colors, like having an all white and an all black jersey doesn't work. You have to have a big, bright, colorful jersey, which would be fine if you're talking about the Blues, because like the Blues have a very colorful, especially that old Blues, which is now their third jersey with the red stripes as well. Like, you could celebrate that, but instead, all of them needed a little more time in the oven, is what I would say.
I'll also say this, like, I understand the idea that you want to put the music bars on the jerseys to represent the Blues. Is it, though?
Yes.
Like, here, when you think about the Blues, do you think about sheet music?
No, that's certainly true. But again, this is where you need the cat. This is where you need the cat to come in. When I think about the Blues, you know what I think of? A cat wearing sunglasses. And if...
Sean, do you give a shit about any of this?
I care about uniforms slightly more than I care about the royal family, but other than that, I find every year this stuff comes out and I see the like pictures go up on Twitter and everyone's mad and I look at it and I go, yeah, that doesn't look very good. And then the actual game happens and I'm like, they look fine.
That's
on the
exactly
ice.
Right. Yes.
They're, so I'm sure these will be roughly the same. And beyond that, I don't care.
Sean, did you like the eggplant and teal ones they used to wear for the All-Star Game 20 years ago?
No. And that was... See, because the other weird thing is, like, with this four-team tournament, like, you kind of have to have... like
Stuff that looks the same.
Yeah, and that you can flip. And so, yeah, I didn't love that. But then again, I should also point out, like... my last really strong uniform take was that I can remember having was when the Sharks came in and with the teal uniforms, and I thought they were terrible and just a disgraceful, and that was super wrong. They're like the best uniforms in the league. So I, at that point, it took me a couple years to get used to it. Then I was like, yeah, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, and I should just not have an opinion on this stuff.
Yeah, I think that... The jerseys the Sabres wore for their skills competition last week or the week before were cool. Like, that style of a jersey is really good. the orange and black, and now I guess they'd be silver and black. But and then somebody posted, like, the ones that are, you know, the black and orange modeled after the Rangers jersey for the Campbell and Wales conferences with the diagonal letters and stuff like that. Like... just, you know, everybody's all about throwbacks these days. Just be like, you know what, we're bringing the fucking 1977 All-Star Game jersey. And don't get mad at me if that's like an ugly jersey or something. I'm picking a year at random. But like, just bring back a random old All-Star jersey every single – the jersey from 30 years ago is the All-Star jersey for the next 10 years. Great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Whatever.
That'd be pretty cool, right?
I did like the black and orange, man.
Yeah, those are cool. So, like, everybody likes those, but you know, Adidas or the NHL is like, we won't sell enough of them. Oh, I think you'd sell a fucking shitload of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's always room for nostalgia. And I think that, like, seeing today's, like, young players, and let's face it, with the way that people are dropping out of the All-Star game, it'll just be the kids.
Except Dylan Larkin, wearing, who's like, please, I beg you, don't.
Right.
He's right to do it.
Wearing shit from the 1980s is kind of cool. I like it. It's like Stranger Things.
Okay, now I don't like it again.
We had... the official mascot of the All-Star game is the Demogorgon. It'd be really fun. We had Bill Daly on the other podcast where I don't curse. And he said that while the NHL was cool with Alex Ovechkin missing the All-Star game... last season, because he went to all the other All-Star games pretty much and also, you know, played four rounds of Stanley Cup playoff hockey, that skipping out this year for some rest, they're not really cool with it, and they might look to try to figure out a way to ensure the star players appear in the midseason classic. This led to widespread decrying of the NHL from people who say, fuck the All-Star game, who gives a shit? Why would you punish players for skipping it? What were your thoughts on this?
I think those people are right. I mean, like, here's what I would say is at least make the stars, like, if you want to be the star's going to be there, make them show up for the skills competition. Don't make them actually play in the game. Invite 75 people, like, just an insane number of players, five guys from every team, so that, like, you do get, you know, every team represented in some way, but also, like, so that you have the actual fastest skater, the actual hardest shooter in the league, and not just, like, the guy who happens to be on the All-Star team who shoots the puck pretty hard, but not, like, Shea Weber hard, or whatever, you know what I mean? That's my big All-Star game take is, like, that's what the NBA does. They don't get, like, the best dunkers from the All-Star team. They get the best dunkers. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the specialization.
Yes.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah.
And they have done that in the past. Like, there was a time where every team did its own hardest shot competition and, like, the eight hardest shots in the league. But the problem was sometimes you got guys winning those and they showed up and you're at the All-Star weekend going, I don't even know who this player is.
Yeah, but that's how you make your start. Again, I said it last week, but, like, that's how Dylan Larkin became famous, was he was fucking fast.
That's how Dylan Larkin becomes famous, but when it's like Frederick Modine,
make Freddie Modine like the Harlem Globetrotters of shooting the puck hard. Like, who cares? That sounds cool to me.
Maybe. The All-Star game sucks. I've said that a million times.
Skills competition kicks ass.
I understand why the players don't want to go. But if you're going to have it, if you're going to insist on having the thing, you kind of want the players there. So I don't know. I think the suspension rule they have now is fine. I don't know what more you can really do. I mean, the game isn't fun. It isn't, nobody likes it other than children and corporate partners. And the latter group seems to be the one the NHL cares about. So fine, do your thing. There's certain things you can do. I think part of the reason the NBA All-Star Weekend is works a little bit better is they tend to turn it into this huge party
that
players don't want to miss. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, I think I saw somebody say, like, only do the All-Star game in, like, cool locations. Like, put it in Vegas every year, and then, you know, maybe it becomes a thing. The NFL did that with the Pro Bowl for so many years where it was in Hawaii, so it was a free trip to Hawaii. Yeah, maybe you get some players to go to that. Beyond that, I think the only other thing you could do is put a big bonus in, like, the standard contract where it's, like, $100,000 or $200,000 for making the All-Star team, but you have to actually go to the game and have that be, like, a non-cap hit bonus that's just always there. That you can earn, and if you turn down, then you're turning down that kind of money. I don't know. Would that help for Alexander Ovechkin? Probably not. Like, there's just a point where I don't know if this problem is fixable, and I don't know if this problem is really even that high on the list of problems with the All-Star game in general. If you really want to do a showcase of the best of the best, you got to do some sort of international tournament. That seems to be the one thing that would bring the players out. I've seen that suggestion a few times that you do a mini World Cup some years, do the Olympics. Hey, I mean, you know, and like a lot of people, I have no sympathy for the NHL saying, oh, we don't get to showcase our stars when they don't go to the Olympics because it disrupts the season. Well, Alexander Ovechkin is saying your crappy All-Star game disrupts my season. I'm not going to do it. I think he's got a point. The only other thing you could do, and this would only work for short term, would be to just play with the format to an extent that some of the players would maybe be intrigued enough to go. I've always liked the idea of doing, if you're going to do four teams, do one team of guys in their first 3 years in the league. That's your young gun team. Do, like, your young stars in their prime, do your veteran stars in their prime, and then do your old guys team. Maybe that would kind of gin up the competitive juices and a little bit, and guys would want to go. But also maybe not. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to just skate back and forth doing crappy, low-effort hockey as your showcase game, you can't be surprised that a lot of players are like, you know what, I'm going to go on vacation with my family. Thanks very much.
Okay, what about if you get 10 grand per check you throw in these games?
50 grand for a fight, 10 grand for a open ice body check, 5 for a slash to the wrist that puts another team's star player out.
2,500 for blocking a shot.
For blocking a shot, right? And all the players lobby for Tortorella to be named one of the coaches so they can make crazy bank. Two reactions to this. First off, it will be an international play format next year, in some way, shape, or form. We talked about this on the bonus episode that we did this week, the look back at 1999-2000, which you should really check out on the Patreon. But it's going to be something internationally flavored, and they'll get away from this divisional thing, at least for next season. But no one's really sure what that is going to look like. But the other thing, too, to speak to one of your points, Sean, like, these guys are always complaining about how the NHL markets individual players. They don't market stars. You know, it's why can't we be more like the NBA? And then, like, the one fucking thing in the season that they do that's all about individual players and marketing stars, like, these guys duck out of it. And I always find that to be a little bit hypocritical, to be candid.
I get what you're saying, and that's certainly true. But again, it's the Dylan Larkin thing of, well, fuck. Like, would I rather be promoted or would I rather go on vacation? I think I'd rather go on vacation and take you know, 5 days off in the middle of a brutally long, physically arduous season. Like, I get why guys take the – you know, it's not an option, but – take the option.
And especially, yeah, if we're all going to say that it's all about winning, and if you don't win a Stanley Cup, you're nothing. Yeah,
and I mean, these guys are going to do it. Even the thing Sean said earlier about, you know, the corporate executives at the league's partners or whatever, like, if you cut down the amount of glad handing these guys have to do with all these, you know, the senior VP of marketing at fucking Enterprise Rental Car or whatever, I bet it's like, you know what, if I can just hang out with my friends a little bit more and, like, party a little bit more, okay, maybe I would go if it wasn't in St. Louis.
that's the biggest point. Like, when they do the game in Vegas,
everybody will go.
100%
yeah.
attendance.
Yeah, of course.
yeah.
Just do it in Miami or Vegas every single year, maybe LA too, and everybody goes. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
You might even get them to go to New York, but I don't know. Maybe not, because it's cold. But if you get them to – if you go to, like, a party city with a little bit of – Nashville, I think, was a pretty well-attended one. I don't think anybody skipped out of that one. So, you know, you want people to go. Make it worth your while.
And if you're in – if you're a fan sitting in Ottawa or Winnipeg or Buffalo or wherever going, well, what about us?
Well, you're not going to the All-Star game anyway.
Or you get the – yeah, well, no, but it, like, you know, how come we – like, Ottawa hosted the All-Star game a few years ago. Are we never going to get that again? No, maybe not, but you get the draft or you get an outdoor game. Like, there's marquee events to spread around. That might be the way to approach it.
Indeed. Well, it should be – I think it's going to be a pretty fun event. The people in St. Louis are certainly – all about the hockey these days. We should mention before we get into coaches being fired and whatnot, the greatest thing that happened this week, which is Larry David becoming a hockey commentator.
That was pretty tight.
If you haven't heard, Larry David of Curb Your Enthusiasm fame.
Who?
What is that? Yeah, it's true.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, it's a show that's on HBO occasionally. You may know him as the co-creator of Seinfeld. He was on ESPN Radio in New York. And now Larry David does attend Ranger games now and again. He's a fan. He gets the game. And tore into Rangers coach David Quinn for his usage of Kaapo Kakko in the third period of a game against Calgary.
Now, I don't need any Kakko.
Why did he bench Kakko in that third period after he scored? First goal in
14. Why do I love hearing him say that?
First goal in 14 games, and an assist. He benches him because he takes a bad penalty.
Right.
Come on, that's ridiculous.
But you got to learn when you take the bad penalties. You can't be out there in these one-goal games. Every game is important. I can't believe I'm breaking down hockey with Larry Dave.
But you think putting him on the bench is going to make him – you don't think he knows that he took a bad penalty? He knows. Benching him isn't going to do anything. They need another goal.
He's done a good job. I'm not going to question Quinn. Wow. Homer.
He's 18 years old. You are such a fraud.
He won't question his team.
Did you ever have –
So Larry David taking a
that
run.
That was kind of my reaction when they gave Curb another season after the last one, where it was like, yeah, he knows he did a bad thing. Like, you can cut him some slack a little bit.
Oh, I totally think that too. That this is like redemption tour, because the last season was underwhelming,
terrible.
I completely agree.
Really bad season.
Now, I bring this up about Larry David because as we do the show, breaking news: New York Rangers coach David Quinn has responded to noted hockey pundit Larry David by saying, "Listen, I've watched a few bad Seinfelds and Curbs. I still love Larry David and his work." Fuck.
I don't know, man.
Taking a run at the man's art. Right.
Good take. Way to play into it.
Yeah, the way Dave Quinn has coached the Rangers is as if Larry had built an entire season around Jeff and Susie's daughter, Sammy. Like,
is that a usage
joke?
Yes,
of course it is. I shouldn't have to explain this. That's anyway. Yes,
I like it.
Thank you.
I know. I appreciate it. Hey, my only concern about Larry David going viral with comments about the NHL is that it increases the chances of the NHL putting him on the award show and ruining him, which is what happens whenever anybody famous.
Do you think that he's going to let the hacks they get to write the NHL awards? Do you think he's going to let them write for him? Come on.
I'd watch the NHL Awards if it was 2 hours of Larry David doing
riffing.
"What am I doing here?"
Yeah.
jokes.
No, of course.
Yes.
But he's not going to let those schlubs, those UCB rejects, like, write jokes for him. It's not going to happen.
I love the fact that Ryan thinks that the NHL Awards has joke writers.
Here's the thing:
No one's.
No one's come even close to UCP. It's the fucking guy. It's probably the NHL.com writer. It's probably fucking Sean Rourke writing the jokes.
No, I
can only tell you from behind the scenes, when Jay Moore was hosting, he had his own writers. It was nobody at the NHL. He did his own stuff. I'm assuming it's the same for it. Yeah. So, if whoever the host is sucks, it's because they wrote their own jokes. Because, yeah, you're right. Mm. I can just picture we got some pretty good references here for it. And yeah, that's not going to happen.
For me, the best part of that clip is when the guy tried to defend Quinn and Larry David called him a fraud.
Yeah.
He called him a fraud.
That is primo sports radio shit. That is – calling someone a fraud is like the most sports radio thing you could possibly call someone. I loved it.
It's so good. It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was sick.
Favorite Curb episode? Do you have a favorite Curb?
Palestinian Chicken, I think, is probably most people's.
There it is.
But I think... Mm-hmm.
The Manos, the Hands of Fate of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite.
It's really fucking good. But I like a few of the episodes with the season of the producers. I thought was really, really funny. And then, you know, like the Freak
I would say
Book
either-
is another all-timer. So.
Palestinian Chicken or the Carpool Lane one is
Carpool.
Is,
I mean,
is,
Carpool Lane saved a guy's life, right? So,
yeah, saved a guy's life, and also like a one that it's like if you broke that out into two different episodes, where it's an episode about using the carpool lane to get to a Dodgers game, and also a different episode about pot. Like, they're both great episodes.
Yes.
Like,
you know what?
The marijuana plotline with him and his father is fucking phenomenal.
I am canceling all the other stuff I said. The Orphan is the best episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm because it's a Funkhauser episode.
It is a Funkhauser episode. I went back and watched a little Curb the other day just because in seeing the ads for the new season, I got kind of the bug. And it's not the best episode, but I think the best comedy concept that he came up with in Curb was the Survivor episode. The idea that a guy brings Cody from Survivor or Colby from Survivor to a dinner and Larry believes that it's going to be a Holocaust survivor is fucking I feel like I have a pretty good comedic mind. I could not get to that level.
Oh, you don't think you're on the same
genius
level as Larry fucking David? That's interesting. Okay.
No, I will freely admit on the podcast right now. I don't think I'm as funny as Larry David. There, I've said it. I'm going to put it out in the world. there. I've admitted it. Admitting it is the first step. The Predators admitted that they think Peter Laviolette was the problem, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, after days after we both predicted that in our 2020 predictions. So although we're both of us are only halfway there because he needs to wind up in Seattle for your prediction to come true, and the Predators have to turn things around and make the playoffs.
On that higher,
which
I don't know.
Yeah, I see. I was kind of assuming that they would expand their search a little further than just who was David Poyle's ex-roommate's cousin or whatever the criteria is.
By the way,
be, so.
Can we talk about the fact that on the conference call, like somebody, because they were like, oh, the Devils love this fucking guy, blah, blah, blah. And somebody on the conference call asked,
yes!
Okay, if they like him so much, why do you think they fired him? And there were like audible gasps from the media that was like, yeah. That is an untoward
question. It was
question.
A great question.
It's a perfect question.
Yeah, and it was, I might have been the same dude who was like, you know, Peter Laviolette made the playoffs every year he was here. John Hines made it once in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Yeah,
that's
and
fucking
like,
great.
Well, and not to mention this idea that like New Jersey sold this guy so hard because they just love him so much. Yeah, they're also paying him. So when he gets hired by another team,
they don't have to pay him no more.
Takes him off their payroll. Like I would definitely, if I had to let somebody go and still pay them, I would try very hard to talk you guys into hiring that person.
Oh yeah,
person,
this
so
guy,
I didn't have to pay them
man,
anymore.
He was one player away from winning four consecutive Jack Adams, and that player is Wayne Gretzky
Taylor
from 1985. But hey, you know,
the Ryan, your points taken though. Like, let's say you run a multi-million-dollar business. And let's say that you have to hire one of the most important for one of the most important positions in that business. How many people would you talk to?
Greg, I would talk
to
one
vet people.
And it would be
right?
It would be a guy that I just had saved in my cell phone as, you know, his nickname from college anyway.
Right.
Psycho
and he
shit.
Was the manager of Enron. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's the thing. I don't, like, one guy, he doesn't even win anything, and he's the only guy you talk to. I just don't understand it. Like, why not take the fucking week and sniff around and see who's available and see who's the best fit and who has the best ideas? Like, John Hines said their first reach out to him was a day before he was hired. So, like, they just basically said, this is the guy.
Yes.
Like, I refuse to believe that the fucking Nashville Predators were casting a jealous eye at the New Jersey Devils and saying, oh, whoa, if only we had fucking John Hines right now.
It's truly.
Like, that's impossible.
I made the joke on Twitter, but it's like there are 31, soon to be 32 NHL head coaching jobs, and 35 people are considered qualified for it in the entire fucking world. It's literally
true.
Incredible how much there are like retreads. And so, I can't remember who, but somebody was like, well, you know, the last six cup winners have been guys who had coached in the NHL before. And it's like, no, but you said the same thing I'm saying. Like, you're just saying the same thing a different way. Is only fucking five people are ever considered for any open NHL job. There is never a thought put into – and part of it is because, like, when they do go off the board and hire Dave Quinn, he's like, well, I'm going to use Brendan Smith as my number three right fucking wing. And it's like, maybe there are only 35 people who are qualified to do this. But it's truly right. Insane that, like, not one person is like, what if we thought – not outside the box, but maybe closer to the edge of the box –
Sean, baseline question. Should Peter Laviolette have been fired?
I mean, it's always hard to say without knowing what's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, there was a reason that he was near the top of all our lists as a guy on the hot seat. He had been there forever. Your message does start to fade in time. The team wasn't playing well. They were underachieving. They'd made big moves on the roster. There's only so many cards a GM can play, especially during the season. And fair or not, I'm not saying Peter Laviolette's a bad coach. I'm not saying he won't have a lot of success. I'm not saying John Hines won't come in and do a worse job. But yeah, you know, at some point, this is one of the few tools in your toolbox, and I think this was the right time
to use it. Yeah, I mean, it's the thing of how many – yeah, they – like you said, they went out and they got talent every single year he was there, and they all underperformed under Peter Laviolette, who I think, again, is a good coach, but like when you know, P.K. Subban – stinks, and maybe that's not the best example because, you know, he just maybe got a little too injured and, you know, lost what made him so special in the first place. But when you bring in a Ryan Johansson and he has one good season, when Philip Forsberg has one good season, gets paid, and doesn't really ever return to that level, when Kyle Turris comes in and is nothing basically on your roster, and now Matt Duchene is having an okay season, but, you know, they're paying him way more than to just be okay. And when all of those guys are underperforming who aren't Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, basically, you start to go, I wonder if somebody else might be the problem here, you know? And like, that's the only, like, conclusion you can reasonably come to, I think, at a certain point. So, you know, it can't be a coincidence that all these guys have underperformed over multiple seasons is basically my take on it.
And you know, then the other thing is, and I think it was it Elliot Friedman that had the stat where, like, in the last 2 years, there's only been one coach fired when his goalies were putting up better than a 900 save percentage.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when your goaltending's bad, and it does put John Hines in a good position because there's a lot of indicators that this team was underperforming for reasons that weren't necessarily coaching related. And so he might come in, and even if he does as good a job as Peter Laviolette, things might turn around anyways, and he'll get the credit for that. And look, I'm not saying John Hines is a bad coach. I'm not saying he's not the best option that they had right now. I just wish I saw something in all of the coverage that started as soon as Peter Laviolette was fired. And like, weirdly, there was like half a dozen reporters who all tweeted out like, oh, I'm getting the sense that maybe John Hines might be a kid. Like, it was clearly something that got fed out there. And I just would have loved to have seen somebody say, here's why John Hines is a good choice. Here's why he would be the best coach. Here's why his system fits with the pre. And all I saw was David Poile has a connection to Team USA. Yep. David Poile and Ray Shiro.
But that's right.
And even to the extent that there was one where it's like he's the assistant GM's former roommate. And like that was a reason given for this being a good fit. And it's like, how about he's a good coach? How about we worry about that instead of all of these little cross connections and who knows who and who used to play with him?
But the cross connections is all that like, to Ryan's point, that's all that happens now in the NHL. Yeah. Like,
no, it's not unique for sure.
It's not, and look, it sucks, like, because it closes off the fucking pipeline to so many qualified people who didn't have the good fortune of fucking working for some dude's former assistant GM or having played college hockey with the other assistant. Like fucking, it speaks to all the problems that we have in this league. One, with the opportunities for guys that aren't part of the nepotism chain, but also for people that, you know, kind of look a little different. You know, that's part of the problem too, is that, you know, when you are limiting your pool of candidates to one fucking guy within a 24-hour period, well, goddamn it, like, how many people does that leave out in the cold?
And I get that. It does. And I get that the counter argument to that is going to be, look, it's the middle of the season.
Go with what you know.
You can't do an extensive search. You can't. And I can't sit here, like, look, I'm a Leafs fan. I can't sit here and dump too much on the Predators. I just saw my team fire a coach. And who did they do an extensive search? No. Kyle Dubas hired the guy that we all knew he was going to hire, that he's already hired before, that he's been working with for years. And everybody thinks that's great. And everybody thinks that, you know, this guy's maybe going to be the coach of the year now. So it can work. And even during the season, yeah, it can work. But you're right. Like, just the fact that we're so used to this in the NHL that we think this guy used to be the assistant GM's former roommate is a good reason to put out in the world for making a change. And that doesn't even strike us as odd when we're saying it, unless you take a step back and think about it.
It's annoying. I'll make the case for John Hines. First of all, Laviolette's team at 5-on-5 was pretty damn good.
Yeah, the problem was they were horrible on both ends of the ice at special teams. So
they couldn't get a save in any situation.
And their penalty kill was, if not at the bottom of the league,
it was like 29th.
And their power
or something.
Play, which was, yeah, their power play was at the bottom of the league last season. Now it's like 22nd or something. So, like you said, their special teams suck. Where John Hines works here is in two places. One,
Devils
traditionally always had a pretty good. The Devils traditionally usually had a pretty good penalty kill rather under Hines. So. While you can, you know, give that credit to assistant coaches or what have you, that at least is something that's in his favor. If he can turn that metric around with this Predators team, then they're obviously going to be better for it. Where I think he works, if you want to go under the philosophy of David Poile and say, I've built a playoff roster here, and Peter Laviolette, after 5 or 6 years, has gotten all he can get out of some of these players, but I believe someone else can get more out of them. John Hines is a very good coach for that thing. He's a good motivator. He has really solid relationships with his players. The Devils were in fucking mourning when he got fired. Taylor Hall's talk about how he was a huge influence on him winning the Hart Trophy is completely honest. It's not just shining the guy. Like he made Taylor Hall a better player. And so if your thought is that a different voice and a different level of motivation can get more out of Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene or what have you, then that's a pretty good hire, even if I think from a tactical standpoint, he's nowhere in the class of Peter Laviolette.
Right. No, like I think Sean said it earlier, like sometimes your voice just kind of wears thin and guys are like, okay, Lavi, whatever you say, you know, like – and – but, you know, to that point, like – that might come with John Hines as well because, yeah, okay, he made Taylor Hall a better player. Well, why was Taylor Hall so fucking bad this year then under John Hines, right? Like, you can ask that question, and I think it's a legitimate and fair question, but it's just one of those situations where, you know, you maybe do need to change the voice, but at the end of the day, like, you need – like, what's he going to do? Is he going to be like, hey, Pekka, why don't you try making a fucking save? How's that? How does that sound? and like Pekka Rinne goes, Lavi never told me that. That's a great fucking idea.
Had a thought of that. On the one hand, there's enough situations where guys who are kind of bad in their first jobs get real good in their second jobs. Like Gerard Gallant's a good example of that, where it's conceivable that John Hines walked into the situation and does quite well. On the other hand, he's coached in 5 playoff games. Like, his team sucked. And they sucked in seasons where they were supposed to be good, and they sucked in seasons when they were supposed to be bad. But they were never really good, outside of one season where Taylor Hall put the team on his back, and they got, like, the best 3 weeks of Keith Kincaid's life as a goaltender to make the playoffs as a fucking last seed in. So I don't know, man. It's weird that this was the guy. Like, we've got to be in the John Hines business. But then again, maybe it's the perfect fit for what they're trying to do there. Who the fuck knows? It was just strange to see that was the guy that they had to have. All right. Further breaking news. This courtesy of Matt Kalman on the Boston Bruins beat for the game tonight. Bruce Cassidy says that David Backes will be in for Brett Ritchie because they want everyone to get a chance to play in front of the moms. Now, that's good coaching. Mike Babcock wouldn't have done that.
No, Mike Babcock would have punched David Backes' mom.
No, Mike Babcock was not the physical abuse guy. Mike Babcock would have just degraded her.
He would have made her break down
on the bench.
Yeah, he would have said, submit a list of the best sons on the team. And you can't list your own son. And then she shares it with all the other moms.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to rock the boat here, but, you know, Jake DeBrusque, turns out you are the worst son on the team, according to David's mom.
So goddamn good. Other news, Jason Williams is back. We all knew that, or Justin Williams, rather. Jason Williams, Jesus
I don't
Christ.
Think he's coming
fucking
back.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back at all. Justin Williams is back. He did the Niedermeyer-Solane thing and sat out until January. His team was pretty good. He decided to come back. He kind of played it off that he was sitting on the sideline wondering if he was going to come back or not, but I don't know. I never for a fucking moment thought he wasn't coming back this season. Did you?
No. He was always coming back,
for sure. We all assumed it. You never know until it's done. But, yeah, this is always what made the absolute most sense for everybody.
Are you upset as I am that he didn't announce his comeback inside of a storm surge celebration?
That's the only way to do it. Like that, I mean, come on, this is an entertainment product, folks. You know, like,
yeah,
you don't have him around the arena. You tell all the local beat writers, like, you don't know fucking one thing about Justin Williams being here tonight. And then for the storm surge, you know, all the lights go out and
oh my God. How great is that? And
maybe you don't have him descend from the rafters like Sting.
No.
But maybe you,
can't
you
do that.
Do.
Too risky.
You have him in the pig suit.
That's it.
And the pig comes out and he's dancing and he takes off the head and it's Justin Williams and he goes, "I'm back, babe," like he's mic'd up or whatever. This is basic shit.
That's just you ripping off my Gary Bettman gritty idea from the NHL awards from last year.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
Bettman should come out as gritty and take off that head and go, "Aren't you glad to see me?" I don't think he could descend from the rafters, but I do like the idea of shutting off all the lights. He just skates out really quickly, and then all of a sudden he's in the middle of the circle, and there's a spotlight.
And he's got the C on his jersey. This is because now they're have to go like, we don't know who's going to be the captain. Wink.
Yeah.
One weekend he will have the C on his jersey again. Like this is, again, it's an entertainment product. Make it fun out there.
Yeah. Like Tom Dunn, what are you doing? Like, why are you even doing the celebrations if you're not doing it this way?
Puff of smoke. The only problem with that is how funny would it be if they organized all that and then the team went on like an 8-game losing streak? Yes. They just couldn't do a storm surge. And he's like, "Guys, I'm ready to come back. I'm in shape." And they're like, "No, man, we can't do it until we got to win at home."
Yeah, I mean, then you can have the contingency plan of you know how they actually did it, but the plan A should have been 100%, you know, gimmicks.
I did enjoy the 15 minutes where we were led to believe there was some sort of bidding war or possibility.
Yeah, he might go
to
the Bruins. Yeah, okay.
The fact that the Bruins and the Leafs, because, I mean, clearly that was just put out there to nudge the negotiations over the finish line, but that's a great to say that Toronto and Boston, the two teams that play in a Game 7 every year, would be the two teams that he'd be considering going to is that was fantastic. A lot of times these leaks are like poorly done. That one was A+. Good job to whoever did that one.
I don't know, Sean. I do believe that the Bruins would be interested in a right wing with more than 10 career goals and a pulse. Mm. I mean, that seems to be something that would be the marketing.
Come on, man.
For the Leafs, I mean, come on. What the fuck are the Leafs going to do? We're going to trade Willie Nylander to create cap space to sign Justin Williams. Like, what the fuck? They can't afford anybody. By the way, how good is fucking Austin Matthews this year? Jesus Christ.
He's good.
Is he going to win the Richard?
No.
No?
Young man out of Boston run by the name of David Pastrnak.
If Austin Matthews stays healthy, I think he wins the goal scoring title.
I'm not against it, certainly, but I think he's still going to go with the guy who has been scoring all fucking year.
Well, David Pastrnak's one goal up as we're recording this, so it's in play, put it that way.
That's true.
Yeah. and like, that's he could win the Richard and not get a single heart vote because he pulled his pants down. Right? Is that the equation for Austin Matthews?
I mean,
that's history has shown that the voters will overlook a lot of recent stuff when it comes to voting for MVP. So
it's a very good point. A little thing on the Sharks here. First of all, news broke today that Logan Couture is out for at least 6 weeks. Yet another guy making up an injury to get out of the All-Star game with a fractured ankle. And he hit the end boards in a game against St. Louis and is out for 6 weeks, which really doesn't speak well to the Sharks' potential comeback in the Western Conference. But you, Sean, you wanted to mention the loss that they had against Washington recently.
I mean, that Sunday loss was where this is the one where they They're up 3-2. It's late. This is one of those losses that, or one of those games that can be your season turning point, right? You're in this is a recent Stanley Cup champion. It's the first place overall team. You go in as a road team, as an underdog, and you're up 3-2 in the dying minutes of the third period. Like, this can be like the win that you hang your hat on. Logan Couture scores the empty net goal with a minute left. It's done. You've won the game. It's the biggest win of the year. I think Kevin Kurtz like tweeted out like this is the biggest win that they've had all season. And then it falls apart. Washington scores two goals in the final minute and scores another goal and wins in overtime. Like, just crushing and absolutely psychologically the sort of loss that makes you throw in the towel and say, this is not our year. We're done.
Fucked.
But
over.
The thing that really got to me, and I don't know if that this is, I haven't confirmed it. I don't know if this is actually true, but I saw like one of the stats sites actually said that this was the first time in NHL history that a team scored an empty net goal with the lead, like scored the empty net goal to go up by two and still lost the game.
Wow.
It was one of only, I think, seven times that a team had blown a two-goal lead in the final minute. So maybe it was the only time that a team had scored in the final minute with an empty net goal. But that's fascinating to me because I always, like, every time I'm watching a hockey game and, you know, a team's up by one and they score in the empty net and everyone always goes, oh, it's over now. That ices it. That puts it away. And I'm always like, oh, there's a minute left. Like, there's still time to, like, you'd think it would happen. Yeah. Apparently, at least according to the stat, it had literally never happened before. They're the first team. So when you're in a league that's 100 years old and you're losing in ways that have literally never happened before.
Never happened.
That's bad. So it's probably time to start focusing on who you're going to take with your first pick.
I always say the most humiliating thing in hockey is to get scored on after they put the goalie back in on the empty net goal. This might be worse.
It is.
This might be a lot fucking worse. Like, you know, you've seen teams blow plenty of leads, obviously, even late leads, that kind of thing. I don't think I've ever seen a meltdown quite this embarrassing where you were like, you know what? This team isn't very good, but like the Sharks have plenty of talent. Like they should be able to pull out a game even against a team like Washington who's leading the league and all that kind of stuff. And they were like, you have misunderestimated, very stupid man.
Hey, all right, Mr. President.
You have underestimated how fucking truly committed we are to sucking shit this year. And so...
I gotta tell you, Matt, I'm a Leafs fan.
Yeah.
I got like 4 decades under my belt as a Leafs fan. When I'm watching another team going, oh, that's rough.
That's the worst thing I've ever seen.
And in case you're wondering, even the 4-1 Leafs, but like the first goal was with 90 seconds left. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a minute left that they gave up those two goals. So, wow. I tip my cap that is, and as far as heartbreaking losses you can have midway through a season, that's an all timer, literally.
What are they going to do? Like,
they can't do anything.
Obviously, there's some things they can do. They're going to trade Brandon Dillon. That's fine. He's a UFA. He's going to leave anyway. But I mean, $26.5 million tied up in Carlson, Burns, and Vlasic. $27 million tied up in Couture, Kane, Meyer, and Hurdle. Like, what's the pathway here? Like, is this a team that could possibly reload in some way, shape, or form and still contend? Or can they not do that as long as they're spending $7 million? Like, is Mark Edward Vlasic now Brent Seabrook?
Yeah, yes. I was just going to say, they're Chicago now. Like, they're maybe even a worse Chicago.
Yeah,
exactly.
They're a worse Chicago. And the thing is, like, I've sort of adjusted over the years where I've backed off on looking at teams' cap situations and saying they're screwed. Because every time I say a team is screwed, or every time I say a contract is untradeable, or the team finds a way to get out of it. So I'm not going to sit here and look at their cap situation and go, there's nothing they can do. But if there's any team where there's nothing they can do, it might be these guys, because they're in really rough shape with a lot of these guys, a lot of these contracts. I mean, they've got seven guys on signed through 2023 to deals that are the cheapest of those deals is Martin Jones, $5.75 million. They've got a seven, an $8 million, a six, a seven, an eight, an 11.5 for Carlson.
That's almost 2023. All of them have movement or trade protection of some kind. Like it's
almost
grim.
All of them
it is a grim
are going to
cap
be
friendly
well
page.
Into their 30s by then, except for Timo Meier. Like everybody is in their Martin Jones, you can buy out, you can get out of. Maybe when the new CBA comes, there's compliance buyouts, although that's no guarantee, but that's still 2 years from now. Like this has the potential to be really, really ugly. I've mentioned this before, but Kevin LeBlanc, man, this is why you don't pass up millions of dollars to be a good guy and make sure that your team has the cap room to go. Because I really hope this kid doesn't get screwed by this organization. I hope whatever
they
kind of
trade him.
But well, they could trade him to some team, and he's going to be like, "Hey, I had an under the table handshake deal that I was going to." No, not with us. Sorry, man. Yeah. And it's when he signed that $1 million deal, everyone said, "Yeah, but watch what happens on January 1st." Well, January 1st is come and gone.
I'm waiting. Yeah,
I'm waiting. I'm sure he's waiting too. Like, man, I don't. Yeah.
They have $41.5 million committed to their cap in 2024-25 already.
God.
And all those guys are on the wrong will be like 33, 34, 35 years old. Like it's not even like, oh well, you know, Kevin LeBlanc is whatever, 23 years old. He's signed until, you know, 2025, and that's actually good. No, it's all like Burns.
Vlasic's 32. Burns is 34. Yeah. Carlson's 29, but looks older than that. Like, can I say it? Like, just with the injuries and everything. Even Logan, like, you look at Logan Couture and you're like, yeah, he's the leader of the young
core.
He's
like 30.
He's 30. Like,
yeah.
Eddie Vander Kane's 28, but a physical, like, man.
Yeah, who's getting better? They got like two guys to build around, and it's Meier and Hurdle, and Meier has had a really subpar year after signing that contract.
And who knows when Hurdle, like, it's always a gamble that Hurdle's ever going to be healthy, too.
And Hurdle's 26. Yeah. Like, he's not 22 with, like, you know, he's going to get better and better. Like,
trade him.
I think you have to try to trade Burns, don't you?
Like, you're going to try to trade everybody, but, like, doesn't Burns have a full no move?
He has a partial, but he has like three teams you could trade him to. So it's like,
okay, well, so more or less, yeah.
You might as well have a full no move, yeah.
Somebody has a no move on that team, though. It might be Vlasic.
Vlasic, Carlson, and Thornton.
Which still, I mean,
Thornton,
if you,
fair enough, whatever.
If you say we're going to tear it down, we're going to blow this up and start over and finish last for 3 years, then 30-year-old veterans suddenly, even if they have a no move, may be willing to open it up. Although, right. I don't know, man.
That's
like,
a good point.
But who's taking those
San
contracts?
Jose is a pretty nice place
to
live.
Off your hands.
Well, yeah, you got to need some. You got to get, I mean, the farm system isn't great. They don't have that first pick this year. Like, this is.
Oh, that's so brutal.
They're in
so
really
brutal.
Rough shape.
So that brings me to Nick P's question. This was in the mailbag. We might as well answer it here. Do you guys regret having Doug Wilson take the number one spot in your Ranking the GMs podcast from last summer? The Sharks cap-friendly page looks like a shit show right now.
No going back. Don't go back and look at old podcasts or old articles. We're focused on the future here. Look forward, not back, twirling towards maybe having a good take something.
Twirling.
Yes, I'll give you the short answer. I do regret. I think Doug Wilson's a real good GM. I think he pushed all his chips into the middle on a closing window, which I think is what you should do. I think that's theory a better strategy than kind of hemming and hawing and always being like, no, I got a team that can win the cup now. I'm not going to worry about my draft pick that might help us in 4 years. But it's a strategy with a downside, and the Sharks are becoming the poster child for what that downside can look like.
But it's also recency bias, because I mean, I think that when we gave him that title,
it was based on him having kept this team in contention for over a decade.
The Sharks went to the conference final last year. The Sharks very nearly beat the Blues.
Yeah.
I wrote about this last week.
I don't, because
I had somebody on Twitter reach out to me, and they said, you know, hey, you were one of the only people in the summer who said the Sharks could crash hard. And I said, yeah, I did say that, but I said it even more about the Penguins, because the Penguins were another old team, long-term contracts, locked into an aging core, and the Penguins hadn't even won a game in the playoffs. And I was much more convinced that if any team was going to do this, it was going to be the Penguins. Yeah. And the Penguins look amazing, and it's the Sharks that are just absolutely rock bottom and grabbing a shovel.
Yeah, let's touch on the Penguins now. I had this on the list here, Penguins and Columbus as being two teams that are quite curious this year. The Penguins defensively this year have been fucking phenomenal. I can't believe how good they've been. And I know some of that is the way that Jari's played, but like they've kind of transformed themselves a little bit with all these injuries into being a different kind of team. It's been really impressive.
Yeah, Mike Sullivan, pretty good coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's all right. Yeah. Couple cup rings, you know.
That's just my take, folks. Don't get mad about that.
And here's my thing that I'm really looking forward to. As an aficionado of bad sports takes, I'm looking forward to the Penguins continuing to roll, continuing to look great, continuing to get wins and points, and then Sidney Crosby comes back and they lose two in a row, and somebody, you know what, somebody out there is going to be like, were they maybe better without Sidney Crosby? Is there some? And I'm just I'm preemptively chef kissing that take.
This used to be my big thing, but like they tried so hard for so long to make anybody who wasn't Sidney Crosby better than Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Doughty's the best player in the world. Looks like, starting to look like Claude Giroux's the best player in the world. What about Alex Ovechkin? What about Jonathan Toews? And it's like, I think it's probably just the guy that you keep saying all these other guys are better than is probably still the best player in the world. And like, you know, I don't know why specifically with Sidney Crosby, because it seems like anytime we've ever had another definitive best player in the world, there wasn't a shitload of takes about like, okay, Mario's pretty good, but you know,
yeah, but maybe it's Mike Modano. Yeah,
exactly. Like nobody ever tried that, so I don't know why what Sid did specifically to start that, but like that's why I'm fully not only like prepared for that take, but I have a pretty good idea of who's gonna try and trot it out, you know, like You can get a list of the usual suspects on this one together pretty quickly. So,
the East has a little bit of separation now. Like you could clearly see Washington, the Islanders, and Pittsburgh maybe finishing 1-3, and Boston, Tampa, Toronto are once again solidified in the three spots in the Atlantic.
Yep.
So Carolina, Philly, the Blue Jackets, and Panthers. I mean, unless you wanted to extend it to the Sabres, but I don't think that you should.
We don't.
Like, that's your playoff race.
Your playoff race is basically four
teams for two spots. And the Blue Jackets being in that mix is a big fucking surprise. Like, I give Tortorella credit. Yeah. I mean, they've done a really good job. I mean,
they're playing better this year than they did last year as a team.
They're in the red on goal differential right now. That should be said. But, well, like,
they have two bad goalies. Like, one of whom got insanely
excuse
hot.
Excuse me. I've been told many times in the last week and a half.
Oh, I haven't heard you mention this lately. You have played extraordinarily well.
Did something happen, Greg?
No, I don't want to get into this again. It's fucking. I was making a comment about the media, and then they twisted it into saying he was going to suck.
We're good.
I don't give a shit about Elvis.
We're all set. But like, it really is a situation where, you know, they had coming into the year, you had to say Columbus had the worst tandem in the league. A guy with an .893 career save percentage, or at least the previous 2 years,
without question,
and a guy who had never played in North America before. Korpisalo, for his lack of success in the NHL, had some amount of people going, oh, he's going to be a pretty good goalie in the league one day, and you know, never showing it. Merzlikin's like, who knew? Nobody had any idea what he could be in the NHL, and Columbus just didn't have any other options. And for the first however many games of the season, they were both as bad as everybody expected. Then Korpisalo goes like 940 plus for a 10 or 15 game stretch, something like that. And part of that was the team started playing really fucking good in front of him. And yeah, Merzlikins has – he hasn't been like great or anything, but he's been good enough to win all these games. And so now they're in the conversation because the team in front of those guys is making their jobs pretty easy.
Yeah, and like sixth in expected goals against for the Blue Jackets. I mean, they're playing kind of next level defensively right now this season.
And coming into the year, that's what you would have said their strength was. They have Werenski, they have Jones. If you keep them apart, you're going to have two pretty good defensemen on the ice for 85% of your game, so you're going to be in good shape.
Yeah. This conversation brings us to a little gimmick this week. It's Ryan Lambert's playoff cut gems. Now, is that a play on words of a recent film?
A certain film about sports gambling? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, the Irishman.
Like, this is a concept that I can't like say I invented it or anything. I've heard it on a couple of podcasts in the past, mostly about basketball though. I've never heard it about hockey. But you're given, like, all three of us are given $100 to spend, and we are betting on, because, again, this is the NHL and nobody cares about setting odds for the NHL because nobody bets on the NHL. We don't have odds to make the playoffs, like Vegas odds to make the playoffs, but we do have odds to represent the conference in the Stanley Cup final. So with that in mind, you get $100, you can distribute it however you like among however many teams. If you want to put $1 on the Ottawa Senators because they're 1,000-1 to win the Eastern Conference, you can do that.
Can I put my $100 in my pocket and just acknowledge
you have to pick. I mean, you could put all $100 on, say, the St. Louis Blues, who are 5-1 to win the Western Conference, but I would advise not doing that.
Probably not. All right, I'm in.
So, Sean, why don't we start with your first allotment?
All right. So, I think we had agreed that we're looking at the bubble teams. We could look at all the teams
because that was before we realized that there were not odds to just make the playoffs.
I got you. All right. Well, you know what? I'm gonna swing for the fences a little bit, and partly because I didn't on my original list. I didn't have teams like
Tampa.
I did put Tampa, and I should pick Tampa because I picked Tampa to win the cup last year in our predictions. But
they're 4-1. If you want to drop a few, I probably would,
but it's gonna screw up my math. I've got five teams altogether, so I don't know how you want to. If you want to do this in chunks, or if you want to just kind of go around.
Go ahead. We'll go one per person, and then we'll move through it that way.
Okay, so my first one, and I have a feeling this team might show up on other lists because they tend to be a team that people like us like more than the general public, and that's the Carolina Hurricanes at 10-1. Yeah, I think those are pretty solid odds.
How much are you putting on?
I'm putting $25 down.
$25
because this is a team with a history.
Yeah, these are the odds, by the way,
the playoffs
on Vegas. Yeah. Vegas insider odds. We're going to lock them in right now. We should say
yes. So 10-1. So I win $250 if they
win the cup.
If they win three rounds, right? They got to go.
If they win three rounds, you're right. Yes, sorry, Greg, you're up.
I'll drop $20 on the Dallas Stars at 7-1. Because again, they fired their coach midseason, and
I get it.
As history shows.
Okay, I am going to. I'm going to go a little bit off the board as well here. Not as much as Greg, but I'm going to take Colorado at 6-1, and I'm going to put $20 on them as well.
All right.
And like we can all like you know to be clear, we can all take Colorado, we can all take Dallas, whatever.
Yeah, they're still on the board.
Yep.
My best team on my list at 7-1 is the Penguins. I'm going to throw $25 down on them and just kind of gamble that when Crosby comes back, we won't get the Ewing theory won't kick in, and instead they'll be even better. And yeah, they've looked mm-hmm. good for the last few months. So yeah, give me 7-1. Not much of a long shot, but I'll take it.
Who starts game one of the Stanley Cup final in this scenario for your Penguins?
I don't know, but by that point, I don't care because they only have to make the final. But I don't.
That's exactly right.
You're right. The goaltending is the big flashing warning sign on all of this for the Penguins, and that would concern me. Plus the fact that they have to get past the Islanders again, the Capitals, the Lightning or Bruins or maybe Leafs. It's a tough. All right, you're talking me out of this. Go to the next one.
Yeah, I'll take the Washington Capitals at 5-1, and I will put $40.
How much?
On the Caps, 40.
40 on the Caps.
On the Caps at 5-1.
At 5-1, that's a good bet.
I just assume that one of the goalies will play well, and it'll probably be Holtby because he does play well in the playoffs. And I'll assume that this, you know, these 4 days of rest that Alex Ovechkin's getting in January will obviously lead to him winning the Conn Smythe again. So I will go $40 in the Washington Capitals.
Okay. I'm going to go $30, bumping me up to a nice round total of 50 on the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yep. Oh, hey now.
I mean, they're at 4-1. This seems, you know, the way they're playing these days, all of a sudden, now that the goalie can actually make a save, their all-star goalie, I should say, can actually make a save. Oh yeah, they're fucking unbelievable.
Yep. You're not getting them any better odds as the year goes on. Like, that number is only
exactly
going down.
Right. We're locking it in at 4-1 for sure.
You know what? I'm gonna combine two of my picks because I had a real tough time with the Western Conference. Like, I was looking.
Yeah,
it feels like all the teams that you would expect have the low odds that you would expect, and the other teams I didn't really love anyone. But I'm putting down $20 each, both at 15-1, on the Winnipeg Jets and the Calgary Flames. And those are just some medium longish shot swings at the fences. The Jets, good team, good goaltender. Maybe Dustin Byfuglien coming back. That still seems dicey, but if he does, you know, they're other than the Penguins, that's probably the biggest star who could come back to a lineup and influence a team. Flames, this was a 107-point team last year. They're starting to maybe look like it again, and plus a new coach. Yeah, he's been there for a while, but it's, you know, we saw it with Craig Berube, right? Craig Berube came in November. He didn't come in January. He came in November. It took a month or two to really get it going. So,
you know, people are talking about Sheldon Keefe. I don't have it in front of me. What's their record under Jeff Ward? It's pretty fucking good, right?
It's been better. Yeah.
He's a good coach.
And it takes a while at the best of times, especially when it's something unexpected and weird like that, where there probably wasn't any sort of prep in place. You know, I'm not saying I think the Flames are going to win the conference, but I'll take a swing at it.
Mm-hmm. Dave Rittich plays 101 games.
And Sean, those were $20 each?
$20 each.
Got it.
I picked them to win the cup, so I'll pick them here. $30, 6-1. Who the fuck needs defense? The Toronto Maple Leafs, baby.
Yeah. Oh,
$30.
God bless you, Gregory.
Let's go.
Yeah, I was gonna drop 15 on the Leafs.
And I did not bet on the Leafs because if the Leafs ever win the Stanley Cup or go to the Stanley Cup final, I will have enough good things in my life that I don't need money. So I will be running around the streets, so cartwheeling.
Can you do a cartwheel?
But I will.
I don't think I've ever.
I'll probably
one.
Learn.
Yeah. My kid can do them, but she's like 9 years old.
Don't try. Don't. They make it look easy. Don't. Yeah.
Ryan, is it your turn?
I just took Toronto as well, right. So it's Sean.
I've got $10 left, and I mean, if you're going to do something like this, let's have some fun. Let's get crazy. I'm going to throw $10 down on a long shot, and the only reason I'm doing this is because one of my theories. I've said this a million times. I've written it a million times. Goaltending is voodoo. Every now and then,
Yep.
A team wins for no reason other than some goalie gets hot. And it's just, and it's usually, you know, Jordan Binnington, that's what happened to the Blues last year. Berube helped, you know, other stuff helped, but Jordan Binnington coming out of nowhere and being great, that was the turning point. And usually when this happens, it's one of two things. It's either a veteran star who hasn't been that good lately, but regains his old form, or it's a younger goalie who just comes in and suddenly pops. So I'm going to take
Los Angeles Kings.
No. Not so much. I'm going to, at $10, at 100-1, I'm going to take the team that currently has three goalies, all three of whom kind of match that description. Give me the New York Rangers. Let's roll the dice. Let's see if, you know, Georgiev hasn't been great. Lundqvist hasn't been great, but he's Henrik Lundqvist. And if Shesterkin can come in, he looked okay night one.
He's starting again.
Starting again. Can he be this year's Binnington? Probably not, but 100-1. I'm throwing down $10. I won't even think about it if I don't win, but that's $1,000 in my pocket. If they win, let's get crazy. Let's do it.
Well, I'm not going to get that crazy, but I like your idea.
Greg,
about
you
goalies,
also only have $10 left, just in case. Right. Okay.
I'm fully aware. I'm terrible with money, but good when it's fake play money. So, as you know, World Juniors just happened. It got me thinking about the greatness of Canadian hockey.
How did that go?
Yeah,
what happened?
It got me thinking about the...
haven't heard.
Okay. The greatness of Canadian goaltending. I mean, really, it's a goaltending factory. Fuck off, Finland. It's Canada's goaltending factory that we love. So, obviously, all that established, you want to go with a young, bright Canadian goaltender. The hope for the future. The guy that, when we go to Beijing, may in fact grab the mantle and be the starting goaltender for Team Canada.
On a team with a history of great goaltending.
Right, a history of great goaltending and also a history of playoff success, this team I'm talking about. And also a coach that gets a lot out of his teams in the first year he arrives with that team.
Okay.
I am, of course, talking about a young, plucky go-getter named Carter Hart. An old swinging bachelor named Alain Vigneault, a 25-1 chance at winning the cup, and my last $10.
It's winning the conference.
Oh, winning the conference. The last $10 to my name on the Philadelphia Flyers to make it out of the meat grinder that is the Eastern Conference.
Wow. I like it.
That's pretty good. I like it too. I played it a little bit safe I have two more. I played it a little bit safe with my $10 bet on Vegas. They're the favorites to win the Western Conference right now. You know, I'd only make, what, $35? Is that how that math works? Yeah, it is. But they're fucking good, man, you know? And, like, they're coming together. If they can get the goaltending to stabilize just a little bit more, I, you know, have all the confidence in the world in a team that talented up top, and especially if they do what they always do and go out and get some help at the deadline in a kind of exciting way. Why not, right? And the other one, just because we were just talking about them, I got $5 to throw down here. Columbus Blue Jackets. 40-1, the Columbus Blue Jackets to win the Eastern Conference. Yeah. If my best friend Junas Corposalo can keep this up, we're going all the way to Vegas, baby. Let's go.
I like all these picks. I think they're all going to be right.
It's going to be fun to revisit this when all is said and done.
I will. You know
champion.
What? I wrote it all down. I will get out a pair of scissors and I will tape it onto my desk. Right now, you can hear me cutting. All right, folks.
There it is.
Two things before we go. I wanted to mention the hilariousness that happened with David Staples, who I know is a frequent target of the show sometimes. He tweeted, "When I think of gifted, I think of Orr, Lemieux, Morenz, Harlamov, and McDavid." Someone named T.S. Gange tweeted at him, "How often did you see Morenz?" David Staples said 15-20 times.
And T.S. Grange said he retired 85 years ago.
Yeah, well, like, Howie Morenz is a guy where when his name comes up, I just file that away as that was barely hockey. Like, they all had sticks and a puck, and yeah, it was on
the
ice.
The puck was a pine cone.
Yeah, but like it was. This is not real. This is fake. I'm not joking. I think the Kaiser was still around when he started his career. So when we have that discussion, I don't know that I could even if I was bullshitting a little bit. If somebody called me on it, I'd be like, oh fuck, I guess Howie Morenz is from a billion years ago.
Are you trying to say you wouldn't have claimed to have watched him 15 to 20 times?
You know, I might not have. Maybe once. Maybe I saw him play in an old-timers game, you know, in 1962 and he was 85 years old or whatever. But,
yeah,
I mean, anytime you're claiming to have seen a guy who was born in the 1800s playing hockey, I think you're going to have a bad time with it.
Oh, fuck. And then the other thing, too, just real briefly, no spoilers or anything, because I don't even know what the spoilers are. I've been actively avoiding them. The Jeopardy primetime greatest of all time tournament is so fucking heartwarming. Like,
incredible.
First of all, it's incredible to watch those three guys answer almost every question correctly.
Unless you're Brad, in which case, not so much. He is over his head.
Mine and Ruby's theory is that he simply doesn't have the quick buzzer.
The buzzer, finger, yes. That's always what the problem is. But
and James anytime have, he's and gotten those two are freaks.
Almost anytime he's gotten a double Jeopardy, he has shit his pants. He has like the eyes get real big. I mean, he finished with a negative total last night. In one of the games.
And my favorite thing actually happened in the second episode where Alex Trebek said the thing we were all thinking, which is that the thinner Brad got, the more money he won throughout his life. Like, it's demonstrably true, but also kind of a thing you don't normally point out. The reason I wanted to bring it up is that, like, Jeopardy is one of my favorite things in life. I watched it when I was a kid eating with my family. We never ate at the dining room table. We always ate in the living room. We always watched Jeopardy together. I still watch it. I DVR it. I watch it every night when I get a chance. It's one of those things that I feel is a shared experience for a lot of people, but we don't – it's like doing a crossword puzzle. Like, we all do the crossword puzzle. We don't really talk about doing the crossword puzzle. We all watch Jeopardy. We don't really talk about it. To have 14 million people tune into the first episode and celebrate this fucking thing was great. Like, that's so cool. It maybe means we'll get more primetime game show stunts, because, like, I still remember the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire mania from the first run of those episodes, and that was fun as shit, yep, too. And two, it's just a celebration of everything that the show's built and through the decades, and Trebek and the whole thing, and Johnny Gilbert and all the shit. And again, like, the questions on these shows are so fucking hard, and to see these guys and the most exhilarating thing about the show so far has been the questions have been super hard, and they're super hard for these eggheads, where you can see them straining sometimes.
Yeah, that's
to
so
pull
cool.
the answer from their memory banks, and it's so cool.
Yeah,
to watch.
I feel like a lot of people, when you watch Jeopardy at home, I'm like, Jeopardy's not so hard, right? But with, like, what are they playing for? Like $1 million, something like that. Like, mm-hmm. it's truly amazing, and like, this is the thing that's really impressive to me, is they're playing with all that pressure. They're getting these mega hard questions, like, you know how Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune both have, like, before and after? Well, Jeopardy in the first game was, like, before and after and later than that or something, and you had to do a three
in the middle.
Yeah, and you had to do a three-phrase combination, and it was, like, this is so fun. These guys are just having like a breezy time with it. They're busting each other's balls a little bit. Like, Ken Jennings did the like push all in thing, and Brad's like, you know, you owe him 10% of what you win now. Like, so good. And yeah, like, these guys are just absolutely kicking
it.
But then every once in a while, there will be a category where you're like, that was too easy. This shouldn't be on.
Yeah.
Sean, is Alex Trebek revered as a Canadian icon, or is it like Mike Myers, where because he found so much success in the States, you don't care about him?
He's very much a Canadian icon. I've never been like a huge Jeopardy guy, but we all love Alex Trebek and wish him all the best. And yeah, this is cool that they're doing this and that he's there hosting it. And the other piece of it, and I haven't watched a ton of it, but I'm familiar a little bit with these guys, is it's like, it'd be cool enough to have the three best players ever, but from all accounts, like, all three guys are, like, just good guys. Like, you know, there's not, like, that one, like, the one jerk who's a little too, like, they're all just fun and people like them, and it's cool. Yeah, it's, and I'm glad to hear that it's living up to the hype and people are really enjoying it.
And if they are jerks, it's, like, born out of being that smart and being that good at something. I do wish that at the end of this run, like, whoever wins, it's like Willy Wonka, where they just, like, hand the keys to the show, and Alex is like, that's all for me, folks. Ken Jennings is your new host. You know, that'd be pretty cool. Probably won't do it that way.
Well, I mean, the hockey connection is Alex Trebek said that he wanted Alex Faust, friend of the podcast.
Yes, friend of the podcast.
To be the host of Jeopardy.
We mentioned this when Trebek got sick. I still think that the guy I would choose, if it's not Ken Jennings, and I do like the idea that, like, a GOAT player becoming the host of the show.
Yeah, that's what the tournament should be, is James Holzhauer, you won, now you're the new Alex
Trebek. You're the new host, completely.
It's a real Santa Claus situation.
If you weren't going in that direction, the guy I would pick is John Hodgman. Like, I think he'd be a really awesome host for the show. I think he would also have that Trebek kind of winking at the camera thing sometimes about the show, and he's someone who likes knowledge and
I love
comes
to like
off
knowledge,
as an egghead.
Dude, I'm always saying this to people. Liking knowledge is cool.
No, but it's true. I think that might be the underlying thing with this whole Jeopardy bit, is that, like, at a time when there's such a premium on being the dumbest shithead you could be in life, and the dumbest and worst among us seem to advance the farthest, to the point where anti-intellectualism is celebrated in certain circles.
Some of those, like, circles are the freaking Oval Office, Greg, from the
there it is,
orange
with that
buffoon
orange
himself,
Cheeto.
The Cheeto in chief.
There it is. There he goes, folks. To, like, have something be popular and celebrated where knowledge is at a premium and learning things is at a premium is just so fucking refreshing.
Yeah, we all like knowledge here, and we're always saying it to people.
Yeah. It's amazing the same network that brings us America's Funniest Home Videos also brings us the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions.
And
great.
With that having been said, Tom Bergeron should be the new host of... No,
Oh,
yeah.
There.
But I will say this. If it is Alex, or if it is Alex Faust taking over for Trebek, he has to announce it on this podcast.
Yeah, that's the rule.
That's the rule.
Once you've been on Puck Soup, you have to announce your biggest news on Puck Soup, which is why I was so disappointed at Anthony Weiner for not telling us all he was going to jail.
I mean,
on Puck Soup,
can we say that Puck Soup is part of the reason that Hillary lost? Well, you know,
I mean, as good a reason as any. All right. That's the show for this week. I'm Greg Wyshynski. You can read my stuff on ESPN.com. The Wishlist, my column, publishes every Thursday. This week's edition was the 15 most shocking moments of the season so far. But I also get into the All-Star jerseys and some other stuff in the column as well. And you can listen to my other podcast, ESPN on Ice, with Emily Kaplan, where we had a giant honkin' news-making interview with Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly this week.
I'm Ryan Lambert. Sign up for the Puck Soup newsletter. I write it every Saturday, and frankly, I'm going to probably be writing it a little bit more. And yeah, it's $4 a month or $8 if you also sign up for the Puck Soup bonus episodes. Like Greg said, we just did one about hockey in the 99-2000 season. We're about to record a mailbag right after this, so plenty of content coming your way on the Puck Soup Patreon.
You can find me on The Athletic. Check out my stuff this week. We did a look at the 8 types of midseason turnarounds that NHL teams typically have. Everything from firing your coach to making a big trade to having a goalie get hot to who the hell knows, because it's the NHL and sometimes weird stuff happens, and tried to figure out which teams that are currently muddling along might be candidates for that sort of bounce back. So check that out. Buy my book. That's it.
Yeah. If it's a celebration of knowledge we're doing, my God, buy right. his book. It's got
might
a bunch
be on
of knowledge
Jeopardy
in it.
Someday. And the,
books
the,
have freaking knowledge.
If the
knowledge,
category
so.
Is history of the NHL, then my book would help a little bit.
And if it's anything like any other sports category on Jeopardy, all the dweebs who end up on that show would not ring in for one
yes.
question.
Yeah.
This Harrison Ford film saved the Colorado Avalanche.
Oh, by the way, speaking of that Jeopardy thing, Ken Jennings was asked, rang in, and he just said what the answer was, but, you know, like, let's say it was Margaret Thatcher. And he was like, Margaret Thatcher? And they accepted it because it was kind of in the form of a question. And I was like, you know what? Finally, like, I've always wondered what would I don't watch it every night, but I've always wondered what would happen if that took place. And he did it. And I was like, that's sick. I love that, actually.
Perfect. Game changer.
Ruby asked me if you could bet no dollars on a daily
yeah,
double.
Can.
And I guess you could,
yeah, you can.
Right?
No, I think it's like $100 minimum, maybe. Now that I say
okay.
that. They've changed the rules right. a lot, but I remember when I had Jeopardy for the Nintendo Entertainment System, you could bet $0 on a daily double.
You could bet $0. I just love that. I love that you're like the game's going so well for you. You get like double Jeopardy and ancient Peruvian cabinet making, and you're just like, I'm good. Nothing. We'll do it for funsies.
Yeah. Funsies.
Jeopardy kicks ass. Goodbye, right. everyone.
Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you. Go to the Patreon for the mailbag and the bonus episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Later. Bye.
See ya.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Box soup.